What happened? Where's the professor? I was just here this afternoon.
What is the purpose of your visit?
Why all these questions? Would you please tell me what's happening?
After you've answered my question.
I'm a professor of Oriental languages at Rushmore University. At the moment, I'm coordinating an international project on which Professor Roth is also working.
Follow me.
She met a guy like you. Now she's dead.
You should believe in ghosts, P-Brain.
He's a closet.
Don't hurt me, please.
Don't keep me waiting for those onions, Herman.
This is all the whiskey you possess?
Everyone out of the way of the bulldozer.
Hello and welcome to Hello, This is the Doom Show. I am Richard. Folks, I am joined by my favorite Marvel Comics character from the DC Universe and Dark Horse by way of comic books, Simon.
Bro, do you even Loki? I don't know what I was going for there.
Hey, it's relevant. It's relevant.
Yeah, I guess so.
I love quoting the Marvel movies. I gotta put her in the water. Yeah. So, folks, we are not talking comic books this time, but don't think that's my last Marvel Comics joke tonight because I'm an idiot. We are getting a little obscure because apparently Severin hasn't put everything out on Blu-ray in regards to Italian horror, but hopefully me just making that dumb joke right now will mean this film will get a freaking Blu-ray by the time we release this episode.
Oh my God.
Maybe they'll be like lazy and be like, hey, can we use your show as the commentary? And I'll be like, no, of course I will. But talk about Spider Labyrinth from 1988 by, I believe his name is pronounced Gianfranco Gianni. That G might be silent. Look out, world. This is his only horror outing. He made a short film, apparently, but I cannot find any trace of it outside of a book. The book I'm going to use for reference in this episode is Roberto Curti's Italian Gothic Horror Films 1980 to 1989, which is really good. You should definitely pick it up. All three volumes are excellent. I didn't even look up a trailer for this thing. Remember trailers?
Yeah, I'm just wondering again about the distribution of this, Sam, because there was the version I had previously seen. What was it? It was, I think, an Italian TV rip, and the one you sent me was, a Japanese Laserdisc?
Yeah, either Japanese Laserdisc or Japanese VHS that was cropped to be widescreen. Not sure.
Hmm.
I am the urn that belongs to the weavers. The great cobweb is closing every passage. It's a labyrinth with no way out.
Studying an ancient religion, different peoples on opposite sides of the world who worship the same gods.
Doesn't sound like a very interesting subject.
They're invading my mind. I can't go on.
Put it away quickly. This affair is extremely dangerous.
You have to understand how important it is. Genevieve,
answer me. No one must ever know. The names of the gods must never be revealed. You have been chosen, Alan.
But yeah, this is unfairly obscure. I'm glad, like, Italian horror people have seen this, but it's kind of crying out for a blue, as I said. Yeah, I found if you have a version that's like an hour and 21, that is a shorter TV cut. And I believe the one I sent you is like an hour 26.
Yeah, I watched it last night, and I'm not sure whether it was just some sort of little things added in or whether it's a case of, you know, we're into the different... what's the word I'm looking for? You know, like video standards, where it's a case of like PAL speed up or something.
Yeah, NTSC versus PAL and whatever Japan uses.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think they're on NTSC. I'm not sure, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I think it's just those Europeans who are on the PAL thing.
Well, they like having friends, so they got lots of PALs.
Boom.
It's listed on IMDb as 2 hours, and I'm like, I don't think so.
Oh, yeah, I saw that, and I was like, God, I wish.
I'm glad IMDb is getting worse. At, like, their format sucks now, and, like...
What have they done to it?
They just made it bigger.
It's weird, though, because, like, some movies you go, and it's, like, the old school thing, and on this Spider Labyrinth thing, it's on the new normal.
Right,
is that what we call it these days? Oh, my God.
So, if you can't find this film, you should,
because
we're about to spoil everything, and since this leans towards a certain... type of film, which we'll talk about in a minute, there's a lot of things to spoil. So if you can't find this freaking movie, just email me doomedmoviethon@gmail.com. I give seminars on how to find movies.
Oh yeah.
Or I'll just send it to you. I don't, whatever.
TED talk.
Yeah, I'll do a TED talk of how to friggin' find a movie. So let's see, I'm gonna go with, I don't think there's a tape, so I'm just gonna read. Speaking of IMDb, here comes the plot synopsis. Alan Whitmore, a young American researcher, goes to Budapest to visit Professor Roth, with whom he collaborated on a secret project called Inextus, which is a new internet startup. Actually, it's a cryptocurrency, y'all. Y'all want to get Bitcoined? Once he arrives in the Hungarian capital, I forgot that Budapest was the capital of Hungarian. Alan finds Roth, who hands him a black book which includes information of the utmost importance. So that's the first 15 minutes of the movie. That's very nice. Good job, guys. But yeah, this movie exposed the early 80s problems with insider trading, because that little book had all the names and addresses of all kinds of stockholders. I don't know what's going on.
I wonder if it's, I'm going to connect it now, nobody can convince me otherwise. I'm sure there's a little black book in, do you remember in Mulholland Drive in an early scene where there's like a hit that goes kind of hilariously wrong?
I was thinking of Mulholland Falls when you said that just now. It's been so many, yes, I remember Mulholland Drive, but I keep thinking about Nick Nolte having a sex scene with Jennifer Connelly.
Oh, God, I think we talked about this before.
Of course we have, because it's like he's too good for her. Like, she's so ugly, and he's such a prime example of a beautiful man. No, I'm just kidding. He's basically like human baloney.
Wait a minute. Aren't they both in the... Well, God, we're coming back to the comic book movies. Are they both in the Hulk movie, the Ang Lee one as well?
I described Nick Nolte's human baloney. I'm not ready to move on from my joke. Yes, they are. And the sex scene in that was really awkward, because he kept hulking out in his pants area.
Oh, doctor.
Did I mention a hurricane's coming to kill us all? So I have nothing left to lose, brother.
God, it's been that kind of
week. Actually, you know what? Let's be honest. You and I have had nothing to lose. since the frickin' hidden episode.
Oh, God, yeah.
When we found out what was hidden inside of us, which is, you're a being of light and I'm a disgusting spider monster parasite like in this movie. Okay, here's the plot. We're gonna talk about it. Sorry. Mm-hmm. These boys are playing in a cobwebbed filled room. One is hiding from the other with a firearm, presumably fake. And young Alan is the other boy who's he gets curious. I'm sorry. He's playing hide and seek, and he wants to hide from his pal. So he gets in this cabinet, and frickin' his buddy locks him in there. And that's when he sees a spider, which I think was the beginning of the stop motion, or was this just like puppet?
It looks like it. Kind of creepy, I can't think of the word, but you know, that kind of uncanny, jerky sort of quality the stop motion tends to have.
Yes. I'm surprised by this because Italian horror didn't do a lot of stop motion.
No.
But when they did it, it's wild. I think there was stop motion in those Hercules movies that Luigi Cozzi did.
Oh, yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah, I've not seen them.
I know. Mm. I still haven't seen them either. I feel dumb. Like, I'm like really excited about these movies that I have been somehow accidentally not purchasing forever. And I buy everything. Mm. So he sees the spider. He goes, ah, spiders. And he wakes up. Our hero, Alan, wakes up. He's grown up and bearded. and this is probably the greatest actor on the planet. This is Roland Wabanga, who was a male model turned actor. He is the worst part about this movie. Now, he doesn't need to be great, obviously, but he's a bit stiff, and I still like him. Mm-hmm. I still like his performance. Sadly, he only did 3 movies, and he died very young.
All right.
According to the Roberto Curti's book, I believe it's suspected that he died of AIDS.
Oh, right. Okay.
That he kind of kept it on the down low and passed away very young and under some kind of mysterious circumstances.
Mm, it's a shame.
But speaking of Hercules, he was in he was in Sinbad of the Seven Seas with Lou Ferrigno. Directed by Enzo G. Castellari and an uncredited Luigi Cozzi. So there you go.
Wow. Hey.
Mm. Oh my God. John Steiner's in there. Sold. I will totally watch that. So he gets called into the to talk to some vague men. Mm. And we get to hear this music for this movie, dude. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Let's talk about. This is music by Franco Piersanti, and I really wasn't that familiar with him. Apparently he's a big jazz guy, which is why there's some nice jazz in this movie.
Oh, the opening credits, yeah definitely.
But his freaking theme is perfect.
Mm.
The theme for this music is just so haunting and so lovely. I can't even get over it, man. Oh, my gosh. I want to play it in this episode, like throughout the whole episode, because I love it so much. But I'm going to put this episode on YouTube eventually.
Yeah.
And I don't want it to get taken down. So, folks, use your imagination. It goes, da goo ga goo ga do ga ga goo ga do ga goo ga. One time, Simon and I did a whole episode on scat talking, and he taught me how to do that. Thank you, Simon.
I'm a scat man.
So, scat man. So he gets in his red Cadillac and he drives around frickin' Dallas, the most fascinating city on the planet. Yeah. And he listens to that old time swing. And he gets to his meeting where he meets the serious men in suits and a plus priest. They want him in Budapest, which I'm going to make 2 movie references here. One is Keanu Reeves. In Bram Stoker's Dracula, Budapest.
All right. I knew that was ringing a bell. God, I need to rewatch that.
And the other one is from Avengers, is when he goes, this is just like in Budapest. And he goes, you and I remember Budapest very differently. One of those men in that scene is Scarlett Johansson. She's a man, baby. So they give him this assignment to go to Budapest and find out Dr. Leo Ross's research. They have lost contact with their boy. Oh, excuse me, Roth. Roth. It was Ross, but he had a lisp, so now it's Roth. So he needs to go check out Leo Roth's, get his reports on this Innextus thing, which is some kind of holy grail of historic importance.
Yeah, there's some, like, I don't know, international scholarly business, possibly, I don't know, intelligence. So you just wonder what the hell's really going on here and say who all these men in the suits are. And it couldn't help me think of just having watching so much X-Files recently. I got a bit of a sort of similar vibe.
Absolutely. That's great. That's a perfect example of MacGuffin to the like science fiction-esque degree.
Yes.
As soon as he leaves the room and they give him his assignment, he's like, perhaps we should have told him everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck you! So he flies to Budapest. We are spared a long scene at the airport and a long flight. Obviously, Mario Bava had nothing to do with this. And he gets to Budapest, and this beautiful lady, who we'll find out is named Genevieve Weiss. Played by the just utterly gorgeous Paola Rinaldi.
You still thinking about Scarlett Johansson?
Yeah, I just want to make every woman a man, baby. I think if you wanted to get information out of me, like if I had some government secrets, which obviously I do, just show me an Austin Powers movie. And by the credits, I will ask you to release me and give you all the information you want to know. Yeah, baby. Fuck. I think British people should cancel that. Like, if you're going to do cancel culture, let's have British people get offended and, like, cancel the Austin Powers series.
On a similar line, did Scottish people ever cancel, what was that movie? Did he direct? Was it So I Married an Axe Murderer?
Oh, my God. Axe Murderers canceled that movie. I actually really like that movie, now that you mention it.
Yeah, I've only seen it once, probably over 20 years ago. I thought it was okay.
It's happily 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's leering at Genevieve while she's driving, just staring at her legs. And she's like, this guy's funny and charming. But he doesn't want to go to the hotel yet. He wants to go meet Dr. Roth. So he gets dropped off. And there's a weird kid. Get used to weird characters, as everyone's weird in Budapest.
Oh, yeah. It's the whole entrance to this, wherever it is, sort of like apartment complex or something. I mean, you have some twitching curtains. So when he gets out of the car, you have this really nice kind of tilt or like canted angle.
Yeah, dude, a little Dutch angle action coming
at
you.
Yeah.
This is a cinematographer named Sebastiano Celeste. He's actually the son of Mama Celeste, who made all those pizzas.
threw me off because I just seen who he's credited here, and I didn't notice this yesterday. I thought this name looked familiar. So he's credited as Nino Celeste, and I think he did first thing that comes to mind. I'm sure he shot some of the two Lucio Fulci House of Doom TV movies.
Oh yeah, yeah, dude, this guy's career is awesome. Did some crime films like Violent Naples, and let me play with my IMDb-ness. I'm glad I said that. That's nice. Let's see. So 11 horror films, including one of my all-time favorites, Night of the Devils.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure if he was cinematographer. No, I think he was just in the camera department on that one, but still.
Mm.
So he's killing it in this movie. But the kid disappears creepily, and then at the door he meets the weird Celia, who is amazing. Yeah. This is Celia Roth, played by Margareta von Kraus. She's a Romanian lady. You'd be surprised how many freaking Romanian movies I've seen. I think I would too.
Yeah.
I would also. Yeah. She lets him in, but she's telling him, like, yo, dog, Leo's acting very strange. He's wiggity wiggity whack. And we meet Leo, and he is terrified of his wife. Like, he is so scared of this woman. And he warns our pal, Alan. He's like, you're in grave danger. He opens a secret compartment. I think it was in a telephone or something. And then he opens up the secret compartment, gives him a handful of Polaroids, which are all dick pics. And he hands him a secret black notebook, just like the one in the thing you referenced earlier.
Mulholland Falls.
Thanks. That was a long time ago. So while they're talking, Leo gets literally blackballed. Presumably the child outside threw this black ball into the room at him, and it smashes through the window, and he's like, yikes. Alan looks out the window, and then Leo disappears.
Oh, so just to back up a bit, I realized that's kind of, it's not like a huge Italian horror staple, but that's a nice image, you know, the child in the swing we do see, obviously, in a few Italian horror films, I think, obviously, especially of Kill Baby Kill and Shock. And, oh, one actually that kind of connects to this, although it's not really creepy, in $5 for an August Moon, which has, I think, William Berger, doesn't it, who's in this?
Hey, yeah, that's right.
Boom.
Very nice. He's a known swinger. Hey. So after this, he meets back up with Genevieve, takes him back to his hotel. And it's strange there, too. Who would have thought?
Yeah. Wow, did you notice even before they went in, the door knockers? They're like the most imposing, gargantuan fucking things I've ever seen.
Dude, once in a great while, I will miss a pair of knockers in a film. This is one of those times. No, I missed them completely. We meet the mistress of the hotel, which is Mrs. Kuhn, K-U-H-N, if you're asking. And this is by Stefan Audran, which I like her alliteration of her name there. Mm. That's probably not how you pronounce it. But she is, I know her immediately from frickin' Jess Franco's Faceless.
Oh, right.
But like actual film nerds will know her as the one-time wife of Claude Chabrol and the one-time wife of Jean-Louis Trintignant. Trinit Gnant. Trintignant.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So she's in The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie and a bunch of other films I've never seen because, you know, art. Did she ever do anything with that German guy everybody likes?
Oh, is that...
Oh, no.
He is German, isn't he? What, Fassbinder?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. No, I've still never seen any of his films on Mission Interstate.
I'm amazing at film history, brother. That German guy everybody likes? Yeah, you know, the German guy who directed Possession in Sallow.
Oh.
He's the one who directed Ken Russell's Devils. The Devil.
Ken Russell's Devils Reject.
The third everybody mother hates right the third motherfuckers. Yeah. Oh, brother. So yes, I love her. She's amazing. She's got a black cat, and right here, I know we're not on video, but I've got a black cat. Unlike her black cat, mine has no teeth. And she just bit me. I got gummed. I gotta see a doctor. So, or a vet. In his room, Alan looks through Leo's notebook full of some cryptic writings. Things like, it is a labyrinth without an exit, and other strange things. And then Alan gets distracted from perusing this as there's a storm brewing. And Genevieve is just getting naked in her hotel, or just her flat across the street.
You do?
She's like, boobs out, y'all. And he decides to go back because good old Leo wants to see him immediately. And so he can't get through. Mrs. Kuhn is calling constantly, can't get through. So he goes out in the storm where he meets our buddy William Berger.
Yes.
Who's a delicious double cheese, double bacon burger. He's just amazing. Even when he's playing crazy homeless guy here, crazy hobo dressing guy.
It reminded me a bit of the kind of heavy Lovecraft sort of vibe here. Kind of quite of, I'm sure there's a similar character in The Shadow over Innsmouth. Kind of proxy, a film I really need to revisit. I've only seen once. That's Stuart Gordon adaptation of that, Dagon.
Right, right. The guys who wrote this, there's quite a few writers. The main dude is Tonino, I believe it's Tonino Cervi or Cervi.
Yeah.
He directed a Brad favorite, which is a very amazing film called Queens of Evil.
Oh, man, yeah. Still need to watch that.
And according to the book I read, he saw our boy Gianfranco Gianni's short film and it was so impressed by it that he dug up this old script that he'd written and said, hey, do you want to direct this? We'll make a whole ton of money. And Gianni said, okay, I'll do this horror thing. Sure, why not? He was intrigued. According to the book, he was intrigued by the trappings of like B horror movies and like working with a low budget and stuff. So he took the job. But he immediately called in a couple of people to help make the screenplay a little more modern, because it was probably one that had been sitting around since the 70s. But yes, long story short, too late. It was very, very influenced by good old H.P. Lovecraft.
That old racist.
You are very correct with the Lovecraftianness. Now, there's some other references coming up in this that we will talk about. William Berger, he warns him. He's like, I'm here to save you. And he warns him of the vortex that he cannot escape if he gets too close to it. Also known as the donut shop I went out to this morning in the rain. I just missed the rain, but I went to Nicola's Donuts here in Tampa. And I believe my arteries are now hardened and closed forever. That's fine. So he gets to his destination. He ignores William Berger, goes to his destination of Leo's place. Not Leo from Twin Peaks. But we get a great Hitchcock reference here where are standing around outside in the rain, and the police are there and the lights are flashing. And I was like, let me guess, they're going to do an overhead shot of those black umbrellas. Mm. And sure enough, they did an overhead shot of those black umbrellas, just like Hitchcock's famous film, Psycho. No, I think it was Foreign Correspondent, actually.
Yeah, that's the one, sir, I think.
Hey, come on. His famous movie, Family Plot. Who knows? That might even happen in Family Plot. I've never seen it.
Jamaican. I don't know. Just throwing titles.
Did you just call me a Jamaican? I mean,
I guess I did.
I'd be proud to be a Jamaican. So, the cop immediately takes his passport.
Yep.
Which should be the end of every paranoid thriller. That should just be the end. The credits, just roll the credits, dude. This round, doughy-headed freaking cop. I can make fun of him because I'm also disgusting. He takes his passport and he gives it to him without question. And dude, you know what we get to see, Simon? Mm. We get to find out that professor, he's pretty hung from the ceiling with giant cobwebs. When he inquires about Dr. Roth's wife, Dr. Roth's?
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Dr. Roth's wife, they find out that lady didn't exist. So Celia just doesn't exist. A lot of people don't believe that my wife Lietta exists, because how could I have ever found a woman?
Oh.
Come on. So after Genevieve is there. She's looking very distraught as well. After they're done being questioned by the cops, they go back to the hotel. And my favorite line of the movie, which will probably be the intro to this show, is they're lamenting Dr. Roth's untimely demise and how messed up things were. And Alan says, yeah, I could use something strong too. And a lot of it. Speaking, I think they're talking about drinks. But they could be talking about huge dicks.
Yeah, who is it you were saying was, does he really, need a stiff one, as you were alluding before to his kind of acting style. It's like, yeah, maybe, unless he's going to have that much of, he needs to have that much of a lot of a stiff thing to kind of push through it and loosen it. I don't know.
I've got a joke later. I'd make it now, I have a joke written at the end for something very along those lines. We're on the same page here. Just before this conversation, good old Mrs. Coon is interrogating Alan. What did he tell you? What did he tell you? Did he tell you anything good? What did he tell you? Well, that's interesting. What did he tell you? And she kind of gives up. He doesn't spill the beans because, of course, you know, like Leo told him, don't tell anybody about this information I'm passing you.
Like she's kind of deputized everybody in the hotel, like guests and staff to the Steve's drop anyway.
Creepy. She asks everyone to leave. They just drop their forks mid-meal and just leave this like little restaurant attached to the hotel. It's so good. Oh, boy. Maria the maid tries to get to him. She also tries to like warn Alan that shit's getting real. And then again, when he's alone in his room, Alan sees frickin' Genevieve across the street getting naked again. And this time, it's not subtle. She knows she's being watched. She's putting her hands on the window and smiling at It's not good. Oh my God. But then the lights go out, or he turns the light out, and then the cabinet door opens, and inside is a spider. And so, yeah, we're getting flashbacks to his childhood trauma with this spider.
I got a bit confused last night with, and this actually happened about twice in the movie with separate things, with, you know, the kid with the cap who is one of the people who stood outside Roth's apartment place. The way it was cut for a moment, I kind of thought, is this meant to be? And when he saw him in the courtyard, was he kind of looking at his past self or something? But no, ooh, I don't think that's what it is.
But that'd be great.
Yeah, totally.
There's only one kid in Italy.
Hmm.
I don't know. So, that night, Maria gets rewarded for trying to be nice and saving Alan. She walks into the bedsheet zone, which is just next door to the Twilight Zone.
Of course.
And we get our very much Suspiria nod here with this whole, let's make walls out of bedsheets. It also reminded me of, you were watching Zombie 3 last night, right?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't there, like, the hospital that has all the bed sheets as walls, too?
There is something like that, or some use of bed sheets, or I think maybe reveal of somebody's behind one. But, very much, I'm glad I doubled those two, because they had some nice overlap and resonance, you know, lots of green lighting. It kind of, the final scene in this, it kind of weirdly felt a little bit like the opening scene in that. And but nice. Then, like, tonally, obviously the film's feel totally different, so it's kind of a perfect double feature, really.
Hands start grabbing at her through the sheets, and somehow they resisted pulling her clothes off. I'm going to applaud. That's Americans don't have that kind of restraint, you know, like an American film, at least one of her, what's the term? Breasticle.
Yes.
That's yes. One. Breasticles, testicles, chain wallet, watch. Oh my God, please help me.
Too late.
Oh God! Yes, I am beyond help. She gets murdered. A buck-toothed creepazoid with a knife comes out. This is our pal Celia. This is her boss form. Like if you're playing video games, and you think you've killed the boss, but you just break its outer shell, and there's a bigger boss inside it, like a little Russian doll. Yeah, she's got a way about her. She's this villain because you know we're getting our dare I say it, giallo vibes from this film. We've been getting giallo vibes for a while now.
Yeah, this, you know, it's, and I know there's people who are probably screaming at us right now to even think of suggesting it, but it's a whole, it was Kim Newman, won it, you know, his whole giallo fantastico sort of subgenre. And even, you know, without that, you have the setups of the, you know, stranger in the strange land, you know, having your passport taken, everybody, you know, seems to be in on something or, you know, so on and so forth. It's kind of all there.
Exactly. But yeah, she kills the shit out of Mary the Maid. And it's just glorious freaking death scene, man. It's badass.
Would you say, I don't know, because there's a lot of great stuff in this. This might be like the standout scene. I don't know.
I think so. I think in terms of, I have a favorite scene, but yeah, this would be the standout scene. My favorite scene is much later that,
cool.
It's one of those moments where you see something and it's like a small, like,
yes.
And you're like, okay, this is cool. And then it builds and builds. And by the time it gets to the conclusion of this moment, you're like, this movie is not fucking around. Like, I really like that. We'll talk about that when we get to that.
But yeah, the just the staging of this from the setup, you know, you have that nice, again, sort of Italian horror staple, or horror staple in general, the spiral staircase and the cat that appears, and there's like billowing curtains and the bouncing ball, which again, obviously that, you know, linking to the swing is another one. I love it.
Alan is, he hears these screams and he gets up to go like investigate to see what's going on. And he meets up with Mrs. Coon, who's in a room by herself. Hmm. Presumably by herself. She's got the walls, not the walls. She's got the windows, all bricked up. She wants to be very alone, but she's rocking the cradle of love.
That's a song, speaking of, right? Rocking, I have, I think, is it?
I swear it's a song.
I'm intrigued.
Well, there's a song called Cradle of Love. And there's a Billy Idol song called Cradle of Love. So yeah, he literally says in the song, let's go rocking in the Cradle of Love, which sounds disgusting. Get away from the cradle, you fucking pervert.
It's like, what were they thinking with that? But yeah, speaking of rocking as well, it's like, who or what is rocking that horse?
Oh, yeah.
What's in there?
Yeah, dude. So yeah, she's lamenting the death of her child. And he sees her spider scar. She has a scar on her wrist that's the shape of a spider. And so she's rocking this thing. And she tells a story about her child dying and how the soul of her child just went into the blackness, into the nothingness. Mm. And he's like, dude, what about God? Like, why don't you like turn to the Lord for comfort? And she's like, no, thank you. She's a tad nihilistic after the death of her child.
Mm.
And she says the scar on her wrist is... when she tried to kill herself, but no.
No.
Meanwhile, Mary's body is just stashed in the closet. Oh, and I want to mention the inhuman, speaking of Lovecraftian things, the inhuman screeching of Celia the murderer whenever she's coming around.
Yeah. Sound in general in this and like linking back to the music, I forgot to say earlier, wouldn't you have the reveal of Roth when he's found hanging or hung or whatever? The music there is really kind of, you have these like queasy sounding like violins.
Yes.
And like there's something else going against it where it's just skin crawling, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, kind of very much like that sound.
Just what the doctor ordered.
So then we go to the bathhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a very unusual moment. So we're got a wide shot of this huge bathhouse with this beautiful scene. Just gorgeous. And so we see Genevieve naked, as she likes to do, wrapping herself in a towel. And is it just me? Or does Alan drop from the ceiling?
It seems like it has the most, like, kind of... unsubtle entrance into the scene ever. He's like been under the water and then it's like, rah, I am here, everybody check me out, which they then do. Everybody's kind of eyeing him up again.
Cannonball.
And this it's like a reverse cannonballs. I don't know what the fuck's happened. Maybe he did. Yeah.
No, I think you're right. I think he did jump out of the water. I thought he dropped from the ceiling. That makes less sense, but
he just like been lurking down there. But he pops up and they're both kind of, you know, everybody's like naked, I guess, in this lovely like sex fog looking stuff that's hanging around it, which is just kind of apt.
Sadly, we don't get to see Roland's Wybanga. he has a little talk with our buddy Genevieve. And then we finally see the sacred object. Oh, he looks at the Polaroids of the sacred object.
Yeah.
And I think he tells her about him finally, and she suggests that he go see Mr. Moritz, I believe his name is.
Oh, is this the antique dealer or something?
Yes. He's the antique dealer that our buddy Roth used to deal with. This is Arnaldo del Acqua, who one thing I thought was ridiculous about this scene, when we do finally get to see this guy, his death is set up like there was a previous scene with him.
Because
they introduce him and then boom, they kill him immediately. But I thought that was funny.
Yeah,
it could have used another moment with him at some point somewhere. He gets directions. Alan gets directions to go see this guy. And of course, the directions are deceptively simple. Mm. And he immediately gets lost in the streets of Budapest. And he runs into a literal wooden cobweb. They've blocked off the street with the most... imposing looking blockade. It's this freaking literal spider web made of steel and wood. It's very funny.
Yeah, it's great. It kind of, I was just thinking, it reminds me about how he keeps getting turned around and lost as well, a bit of the beginning of Lisa and the Devil.
Oh yeah, that's right. Like, is that even a metaphor anymore when you literally build the object? We built a spider labyrinth. It's very subtle. Like
in case there was any doubt in anybody's mind what was going on there.
Our antiques man, Moritz, he gets blackballed. I love saying that.
Oh, God. And then he gets the fucking shit kicked out of him.
Yes.
Doesn't he? It's like,
Yes.
And I think this is what is this kind of what you're getting at. It's like almost comes out of nowhere, and then it'd be like if this was a gangster movie earlier on, somebody'd be asking him for money, and then when he doesn't pay for protection or whatever, right, they'll come around to his house and just tear shit up.
Like he should have at least had a chance to talk to this guy on the phone.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things. Like, you know, this movie does have a few band-aids over the holes in the plot, which is fine.
Yeah.
This would be one of them. It's kind of like, huh, who's this guy? But he gets myrtillated by our good old Celia, the spider woman here. And Alan gets there too late and finds the guy's body. And the creepiest shit is we just see our killer duck behind a curtain and disappear. Like, it's so effective. It's so creepy. Even though you know you've seen her, you know the danger, you know what's going to happen, it's just still just really unsettling.
It is those like subtle things, I think, in this movie, even, you know, from the beginning, like you say, the tilt and like the use of the music and just stuff that I can't put my finger on, like the vibe of, you know, when he first goes to visit Roth, and maybe it's how is his not wife, is it Celia, how she's like made up and is just so severe, and he's so furtive and like paranoid. It's just, it all just puts you completely on edge straight away.
Great stuff. He finds the object, but he has to fight a stop motion spider to get to this object. So it's a little tablet with all the secret runes on it or whatever. But he takes it and gets out of there. William Berger rescues him and encourages him to get down in the sewer with him.
Yeah.
Which is a weird euphemism for sex. Or it's marijuana. Like, hey, let's climb in the sewer.
So what you call hitting the bong these days or something.
Exactly.
Especially if you're not cleaning the bong water in about a month.
It's the gurgling bong water in my soul. He tells him that the secret is in the tablet, and I honestly did not hear any of the information other than I think the tablet can identify the who is part of the conspiracy. I did not listen to any of, I am just like Alan. I'm not listening to any of Alan, I'm not listening to any of the burger warnings.
Yeah, I think this is that point in the movie. And again, just after this week, like last night, that's about where my ability to take those exposition dumps, which again sounds like a euphemism, and just generally take extensive notes, sort of broke down. So like, nope. Yeah, it's just one of those things. Yeah,
it's fine. It's more of the MacGuffin action. So
yeah, exactly.
He tells Alan to leave, to go through this tunnel. This is my favorite scene in the movie, where Alan is, he's going through this cavern system to get away while the spider woman of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is, she's killing Berger. But as he's walking through this cavern, he sees, you know, a body he recognizes. And then he sees another body of someone he did not see get killed. And then another body. And then some skeletons. And then he sees more bodies rotting in this, like, watery, nasty, sewery crapola water. Mm. And then he sees a fucking car.
Ah.
There is a car with a corpse in it at the wheel. And it just gets more and more insane. Like, these people have killed, like, a large section of the population of Budapest.
God, you know, either just is my memory playing up, or I may have missed that. I don't know. Yeah, again, dude. It's just a reason. Like, this whole bit and the production design of it is a big reason. Well, one of many, like, scenes, I guess, where, again, we're just, like, crying out for the Blu-ray, aren't we? Just totally. So we can really sink into all this.
There's also a fake bat, and Fulci and Argento were like, hey, whoa. Now we're going to press charges. Can't steal our shit. So... Berger gets blackballed as well, and we actually see the ball hatch, and there's a giant spider inside. While he's distracted by that, then the spider woman gets him. It's her drool, her spider web comes out of her mouth and then hangs him. So he's also hung, just like Dr. Roth. Mm-hmm. A lot of big men in this movie. The cop picks up Alan. He's like, oh, thank God you're here. And he's like, come on in. I'll take you away. I told you not to wander around the city. And sure enough, the cop has a spider scar. He's got a scar too as well. Alan jumps out of the car, and then he manages to go to Genevieve's place or the hotel. I can't tell where he is. And she wants to have sex, but he's like, hold up. My windbreaker's filthy. Can we please have it dry cleaned first, ma'am? But I love the whole thing of like, all she has to do is, he's completely exhausted. He's on the bed. Mm. All she has to do is climb on top of him. And he's like, I forgot all my troubles. She gives him sexual healing. And I want to thank the Japanese VHS or Laserdisc for, of course, censoring the pubic hair. These two make the sex act. And right before they do, I was hoping for the pixelation that they do in Japan, but they chose to just do a nice mist effect around her groin area because she's so moist.
Again, I think I missed that. And I should say, I was wondering whether I should do this or not. And then I was just like, fuck it. I was watching this Japanese rip you sent me, my laptop plugged into a 55-inch 4K TV.
Yes, this was not a high quality download here. This is the best we got, folks.
You know, it's funny though. It's like a lot of the time, it's one of those, and me and you have obviously watched a lot of like bootlegs and stuff over the years of variable quality. And when you kind of, and especially if you're somebody who's grown up on like VHS and stuff, it's like once you adjust kind of to the relative quality of whatever you're watching, it really doesn't matter.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
And it's like, it still often looks better than you expect it will anyway. So yeah.
How the hell did this survive? After the sex act, Alan falls asleep, as men do after sex, every time without fail. He wakes up and he finds out, after she drools on him, she exhibits some spider lady things on his back, the way all post-coital things happen. She's got some spider senses. He wakes up later, finds that she's taken the tablet, which is a very relatable thing in 2021.
Oh yeah, yeah.
A lot of one night stands, someone wakes up and their phone or their tablet or their netbook, their e-reader, their Sony Walkman has been stolen. Technology joke. So that's when we hear the growl of the spider woman of Celia. She comes after him. I keep wanting to make like a celiac disease. Like I want to make like a gluten-free joke, but that's not smart. That's a dumb thing. So her and Alan fight. This is
fight. Sorry.
Great. Cause you know, some of these killings have happened off screen, obviously. And you know, usually, she's got super strength. This lady, she beats the living shit out of people or just overpowers them immediately. Alan is like, fuck you, bitch. And they have a full-on fight.
So these are like beard energy or something. Just like gives him an extra edge that normal humans don't possess.
Yes. It was really funny because he managed to slice her with something, a piece of glass.
Yeah, or a big shard of the window or something.
Yeah, before that, he has like a weird sculpture with a knife blade and he slices her with that first.
Ah, right.
And Lieta was like, oh, she bleeds. And I'm like, he found out that she's not entirely a supernatural being and he manages to smash her into the mirror or some glass cabinet thing. And then, he uses the glass to stab her throat and he actually beats her. He actually defeats her.
Mm.
I wrote in my notes, the itsy bitsy spider just got effed up, which made me think of the line in Scott Pilgrim. Your BF's about to get effed in the B. I don't know why I just can't get out away from comic book movies, boy.
Apparently not.
I got problems. At least it's a theme in this episode.
Yeah.
I already made all my Bitcoin jokes, so.
Love it.
So this, unfortunately, is not a victory. Genevieve tells him that, you've killed now. You've tasted blood. That means you're one of us, bro.
Yeah, he's totally like played into their hands or something. And now it's like there's like a baton that's being passed or something, I guess.
Yeah, she tells him that you're going to join us and spread your seed around the world. And he's like, didn't I already do that? Waka waka. She's like, trust me, get on the altar. Leads him to this one of those terrifying things where, you know, you're taking this person and you see all the characters of the movie you've met before. And of course, literally everyone is in on it.
Oh, God, yeah. It made me, and just a lot of this movie, I've been saying to you, I'm meaning to rewatch Perfume of the Lady in Black for ages.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I've just not been in the right mood because it's, as much as I, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's the sexual violence is always there.
That's true, yeah.
It makes just, less fun. Mm-hmm, that is one of my favorite freaking Italian horror / giallo offerings of all time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, me too. Like, say, when you are kind of, you know, in a mood where that's not going to bother you as much or whatever, or not acutely sensitive or already borderline depressed, it's like, otherwise, it's like, it's fucking amazing. Oh, actually, there is one of our old episodes this kind of connects me to as well. And you can probably help me out with this, obviously, because you've seen a lot more of these things than I. I know we said this isn't really a giallo. It's more like what some people call like giallo adjacent, or, you know, there are elements or supernatural or whatever. But, you know, like Perfume of the Lady in Black, and the other one's going to mention Short Night of the Glass Dolls.
Oh, yeah.
Films
that
have that kind of paranoid conspiracy sort of element to them. Oh, and as well, because I would rewatch this recently, I said, so I know it's Black Gloves and J&B in it, The Eyes Wide Shut is now a giallo. It's canon.
Yes. another one that I think inspired this movie, based on, because some of the titles you mentioned just now inspired Roberto Curti, the author, those you mentioned, and also House of the Laughing Windows.
Oh God, of course, yeah.
This feels like a little bit of poopy Avati.
That's a point. And somebody else mentioned related to that and to him and this. I've not seen this many times. It means rewatch it for ages, but Zedda a bit as well.
Oh, yeah, dude. Hell yeah. My top three favorite Italian horrors right there.
Nice.
Check out Brad and I talking about it. We did that one a while ago. So they tie him up, and we see the creepy baby monster. So this presumably is Miss Coon's dead baby that they've used as a host for their monster.
God, yeah. You know, I don't think I'd even make that connection, but yeah, it makes total sense.
I literally did that just now.
Cool. No, it would fit though, perfectly.
So they have this like altar in this creepy lit room, and there's a coffin shaped hole in the wall, and inside is the baby monster, which is wild. Wild special effects, man. They've sliced his wrist open, and the baby starts screaming, and then its giant spider legs start poking out of it, and then its neck starts to elongate, the next thing you know, it's got this long neck, and its head turns down, and you see its spider eyes on its head. Brilliant. But Lieta's like, if it's a spider, why does it have a long neck? I'm like, don't think about it. Don't think about it.
My only explanation to that, and it might just be incidental, because that whole stretchy neck effect and some of it made me, and the spider legs coming out made me think very much of The Thing.
Yes, that was another thing that probably referenced this whole sequence.
Yeah.
We should mention this is Sergio Stivaletti.
Ah, right, of course.
Doing the special effects, because you know they're grotesque and insane, and it's Italian, so there you go. So the baby turns into a freaking... what do you call it? Stop motion creature, and put something, I'm guessing something inside of Alan in his wrist hole. But I don't remember what it was. I do not recall at all what it was. I just remember it happening.
Yeah, I could be misremembering this. I thought I'd seen it. Like, I want to say either it dropped something out, or I thought for a minute. So unless I'm misremembering that it shrunk, dove into his wrist or something, I don't even know. I mean, if it's able to kind of unfold like that, then who fucking knows?
Yeah, we see a shot of Celia dead, you know, blood splattered, and all of her wounds disappear, and she goes back to being normal looking Celia again. So maybe these people are immortal, so to speak. That's the end of that scene. Alan's just screaming, and then we cut back to America's most fascinating city, Dallas, Texas, where he's fine. Alan's totally great. Goes to see our people, and he's like, hey, you know, Roth killed himself, didn't tell me anything. There was no research. We don't have any notes. My bad. And they're like, oh, but wait. The priest says, we got a package from him with Polaroids, with all the runes and the symbols. Hold on. I'll go get it. Dude goes to get it, comes back. Yeah. The meeting room with the three guys, the two guys and Alan, is empty. And in the little broom closet next to the meeting room, he finds the bodies of our businessmen, our vague businessmen, blood splattering every square inch of the room. And then they hear that creepy, moaning, groaning cry of the spider woman, and it's freaking Alan with his teeth all funky. Now he's the buck-toothed creature. With a knife, and he's like, rah! Freeze frame, the end. Whew, man. Oh, that's all the plot there. Let's see if I have any other cast that, talk about.
Growl. I was just thinking it's kind of different, but you're reminding me a bit of, probably just because I think about this movie a lot, of Madman and Madman Mars.
Oh yeah, Madman Mars, little whiny bitch sounds like. Oh my god! Thank you for catching that. That is so funny. let's see. Let me look at my book here. This movie did not do well, as a lot of things in the late '80s Italian horror scene did not. They really thought this was going to be a big hit. But it was not. There was an article that came out before it. It does not say who the article author is, but there was they were promoting this movie along with Rorette, which is a big Hitchcock-influenced giallo that I'm trying to locate a decent copy of, as well as R-O-R-R-E-T, and also a film called Il Bosco 1 or Il Bosco...
That makes sense, yeah.
Ooh, Il Bosco... I think I've seen Il Bosco is like a kind of an Evil Dead demons ripoff. It's also called Evil Clutch. It's got Carolina Cataldi Tassoni in it from all kinds of shit like opera. But they were talking about this movie and those two movies as being like this new wave of Italian horror. And the article also referred to Fulci and other older horror directors as hacks.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, really stupid.
That's just some fucking asking for some bad karma right
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
Good grief.
But, yeah, this did not do well at all, which is really sad because I think this is an exceptional film. I think it's really great.
I mean, at any time it would be, but especially for, and I'm not, we all, I'm sure at this point, all love, you know, mid to late 80s Italian horror, but, even though this feels... Maybe a couple of moments aside and things that obviously date the period, not again, you know, again in the best way, but it feels like maybe owing to the, like you said, the script, sounds like it hung around for a while. It feels like an older film, like the pace and kind of vibe of it. But it's just looking at the release dates, it's telling that, it came out in Italy in like late August, and then it says in West Germany out on video, literally on Halloween that same year.
That's not good. This is a post-dubbing one where there's some live sound and there's some people who were dubbed in post.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like the kids in the opening scene, definitely.
Oh, God. Oh my god, they just could never dub children right in these freaking movies. It's so funny. But yeah, this is a perfect example of something really good sneaking out despite the plot holes and the weird shit. Because folks, I hate to tell you this, if a movie's plot doesn't hold up under scrutiny and there's some holes in it, it's still a great movie. Because I don't give a triple rat's ass about plot. I love Italian horror. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, story doesn't work. I'm like, oh, someone wrote this. I'm here for the atmosphere and the weird, man. And this movie. Too. It's got it.
Oh, yeah. Definitely delivered in spades.
But yeah, good old Gianni, he went and made some TV movies. And then he kind of like... finished up his career in documentaries. I'm not sure if he's retired or if he's just, you know, not working because of the pandemic or whatever. Simon, I'm gonna volley this to you. Do you have any other notes? And how do you like this one?
I think we've been through everything really as we were going through. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, no, I love this one. You asked me, and this is how we came to cover it. I forget this was the precise question, but like obscure Italian horror films that I'd love to see on Blu-ray. I think that's what you asked me, and this was the first thing that jumped to mind. And it really is. It's like a holy grail sort of title at this point for getting a proper release. I think we need to like tag Severin and Vinegar Syndrome and God knows who else. You know, in a post a second, somebody please release this.
Exactly.
You know,
but you know what? It doesn't matter because it's already in the works. I bet you.
I'll
bet bitcoins that this is already in the works, getting a Blu-ray right now.
Five in Texas.
I thought you said in Dallas, Texas.
I that's what I was just thinking. In it, oh yeah, In Texas, Dallas, Texas. Oh, or something.
Oh boy. But are you, so you're a fan of this Spider Lab?
Oh yeah, no, I'm a big fan of this one. Yeah, I think I've kind of sort of summed up why already. Like we just said, like you said, the weird and the atmosphere and the kind of unsettling conspiracy vibe, and also how it is, like we said, kind of has giallo elements or slasher elements. So it's still very entertaining to watch. Yeah,
nice. I really, really love the music for this. Mm-hmm. I think the dude, Franco Piersanti, I think his work in this kind of reminds me of Pino Donaggio a little bit.
Yeah, no, I see that. Yeah, some of the themes and stuff. And again, you know what I was saying about it feeling like kind of an older movie? You think what a lot of Italian horror scores of this era kind of sounded like. I mean, God, case in point, I was watching Zombie 3 last night. You know, that's a Stefano Mainetti kind of synth score, which again, I love. But this is much more kind of old world and kind of classical. Yeah, I love it.
Nice. This composer also did the music for a very unusual sexy giallo called Bizarre.
That rings a bell.
From 1987, directed by Giolana Gamba. It is a very ridiculous, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, it is an erotic thriller, but it's just so bizarre. It lives up to its name. I highly recommend Bizarre.
Even the cover on IMDb.
Yeah,
my God.
I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Very, very trashy. Very trashy. I should warn you, it is trash festival. But the camera work is amazing. The art, the production design are just fantastic. Freaking spiral staircases and old architecture and creepy characters, those paranoid, delusional freak fest, you know, so crazy.
Oh, sorry, I just thought there's in one more movie this kind of reminds me of a bit. And again, having that, and I think, you know, like with Shaun of the Glass Dolls and other ones, well, heck, anything in Europe, even, you know, like Italy, Perfume of the Lady in Black.
Yeah.
But I got to thinking of The Sect as well, which is that in Germany, you know, again, having that very old Europe sort of feel kind of adds to the creepiness. And of course, again, that's got the conspiracy vibe of. And you wonder this with Alan in this, you know, whether he's kind of set up from childhood.
Yep. Destined to happen to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then check out our episode on The Sect we did a while ago.
Yeah.
Yes, my joke is about the actor, Mr. Wabanga. He does have a stiffy in that he's very stiff on camera.
Yeah.
But there's also a joke like he had an erection that. See what I did there?
I see.
We've all seen what I did there. Well, Simon, thank you for joining me. I'm glad we freaking did this one. Thank you for picking it.
Oh,
this is wondrous.
Oh, no, my pleasure. My pleasure, man.
And you and I will reap the rewards. We'll get all the royalties from the Blu-ray.
Yeah, if it comes out in like the next 6 months, then yeah, definitely. It will.
Oh, yeah. I think companies who release movies really should just talk to me and you.
Yeah.
Maybe not about movies. Talk to us about freaking flogging the dolphin, sitting on Pete's crotch.
The MCU.
Yes, talk about freaking Iron Man 3 with us.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, that dates me. That's one of the last ones of those I saw, actually.
Damn, that's a while
like
ago.
5 years ago. Yeah.
You love Christmas movies. I know you do.
I do, yeah. That was, God, it was, yes, I remember when I watched that. It was the day we got our dog, actually. So it's about 5 years ago. And I was having a kind of, called it like Black Christmas, watching all of Shane Black's Christmas movies, which is
awesome.
Obviously just pretty much all
his
of his
whole
movies.
Career. Yeah.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Oh, amazing.
Mm.
Well, folks, thanks for listening. Please beware of the vortex. And when a woman starts drooling on your back, marry her.
Do it.
Bye.
Good night.
Hello, this is the Doom Show, is a proud member of the Legion Podcast Network. Please check out the other podcasts on legionpodcasts.com. If you'd like more Hello, This is the Doom Show, go to hellodoomshow.podomatic.com or go to doomedmoviethon.com for the archives. If that's still not enough, go to @doomedmoviethon on Twitter. You can write in to Hello, This is the Doom Show. Use the email doomedmoviethon@gmail.com. Doom Show episodes are available on record and 8-track cassette.